Welcome back to Coast AM. If you're expecting to hear George Knapp, he's not in tonight. I got a call just a couple hours ago asking me if I could fill in. And of course, I rose to the occasion. My name is Rob Simone, filling in once again for George Knapp. And when I asked about what kind of show we have today, I was really delighted. We're going to be talking about one of my favorite subjects, communication with entities beyond the grave. We're going to take a look at the brand new book by George Norrie and Rosemary Ellen Guiley about communications with spirits, the technology that goes into it. It's called Talking to the Dead. We'll also have some clips to play, some electric voice phenomenon, absolutely chilling. We're going to get into that just real soon. And we're also going to talk to Richard Hoagland in the first hour about Comet Elenin and what is going on in the skies above us. And sure enough, if there is a conspiracy in the universe, Richard Hoagland will find it. But I have to tell you, this is an exciting new chapter, no pun intended, in the empire of information that has come out about ghosts. Why? Because we have two of the best qualified people coming together and writing about this new book we're talking about. It's called Talking to the Dead. And it focuses on the technology that has been used, not only today, but going back 100 years, going back to when Tesla and when Edison were tinkering around their laboratories. And what they discovered was that there are avenues of radio frequency electronics that open up windows to worlds that may not be in this physical dimension that we occupy. So as technology has gotten better and better, our chances of actually opening up a dialogue with extra-dimensional beings, with ghosts, increases that much more. So hold on to your hats, because we're going to get into this in a way in which I think has really never been covered before. And as a special surprise, I didn't think I'd be saying this, but welcome to Coast AM, George Norrie.
Robbie, this is a treat for both of us, isn't it?
Yeah, this is sort of like being in the Twilight Zone a little bit. But yes, the Coast to Coast host is, in fact, on the air. And you're going to tell us a little bit about this brand new book, Talking to the Dead.
Absolutely. And of course, next hour, when you talk to Rosemary Ellen Guiley, you're going to have a delight. But also, first of all, I want to thank you not only for helping fill in for us, but for being a part of the Coast to Coast team. I mean, you're doing a great job. When you and I met a year and a half ago up there in San Leandro, and I told you I'm going to have you do some shows, and you went, huh? And you popped in, and you've delivered, and I want to thank you for that.
It's been my pleasure. This is a huge part of my life, and I'm really grateful to be a part of it.
This book, Talking to the Dead, is something that Rosemary Ellen Guiley and I have collaborated on, Rob, for a couple of years. And then she sat down one day and said, George, why don't we just do a book about what is going on the other side, what people are trying to do to communicate, how the dead sometimes make phone calls to us. And I said, okay, but here's the problem, Rosemary. I'm doing Coast to Coast Monday through Friday every night. I'm working 12 hours a night. I can provide X, Y, and Z. But you got to do the rest. You're going to have to travel. You're going to have to do this. And she said, I'll do it. And as you'll find out, Rob, she did. And we put together this book. It came out last Tuesday. It's doing very well. And I'm really excited about it.
Well, Rosemary is one of my favorite authors. She's a very serious and dedicated journalist. And she has a real passion for the paranormal. I don't think you could have picked anyone better to collaborate with.
She's one of the best.
Absolutely.
I mean, when you deal with dreams, paranormal research, it's Rosemary Ellen Guiley. She was a guest of mine, Rob, back in 1996 in St. Louis. I was in a bookstore looking for paranormal guests to put on my local show, and I came across her Encyclopedia of Dreams, and I called her up and I said, hey, would you like to do this show? And she was absolutely riveting. The phone lines never stopped ringing. People loved her, and she's been a staple on Coast to Coast for all these years now.
Yeah, she's an incredible resource, and I know I'm really excited to take a look at this book. And it's coming out right at the right time. October, Halloween is coming out.
spooky time, isn't it?
Yeah, and this is something that even if people are skeptical about it, they can read how these new advancements in technology are bringing brand new evidence that they didn't even think was possible.
We tell people in the book, we don't know what's happening. You make up your own minds. We're going to present you things that have happened, things that are going on, and you decide. But I've got to tell you, Rob, with my own personal experience, I'm a true believer that there is life after death and that sometime we may be able to communicate with these people if we're not doing it already, because it's merely energy that's been transformed into something else.
Mm. Yeah, we could discover that this is just a regular part of the human existence, and these spirits or entities have been with us all the time.
Yep, absolutely.
Yeah. Well, George, thanks for taking a couple minutes, and we're going to get on with it and get even deeper down this rabbit hole.
Have fun with the coast-to-coast ride, my friend. I love you.
Love you, too. Thanks. Well, there you have it. We are on a roll, and we're going to get into that after we talk to the legendary Richard Hoagland. Rosemary Ellen Guiley is coming up in the second hour, and we're going to focus on the anomalies that are happening in space and Comet Elenin. Now, this has been getting a lot of traction lately because we know that there is this object hurtling towards Earth. NASA has confirmed it. The question is, what exactly is this thing? We're getting mixed messages. NASA has been shutting us out on some levels, and people are starting to ask why, and they have a good right to. When anything that big comes close to the planet Earth, it's not just the fact that it's going to hit us, which it won't, but it affects the gravity. And whenever you have something interacting with Earth's gravity, anything and everything is on the table. Richard Hoagland says he's figured out what this thing is, and you're going to be surprised to learn what it is. We're going to get to that right after the break. We're back on Coast to Coast AM, and I've always been intrigued by the things that I've heard Richard Hoagland talk about. And when I found out I was going to be doing this show, filling in for George Knapp, literally a few hours ago, I thought, well, let's take a chance here and get an update, because I'm just about as curious about this as anybody. And I think there's real potential either to discover something or to prepare for something. So it gives me great pleasure to welcome Richard Hoagland to the program. Richard, you out there?
Rob, hi there.
Hello, Richard.
You know, people need to know how far back we've known each other.
I was just going to say, this is a story I have to tell.
Why don't you start and then yeah. I'll fill in if you don't cover the right
thing. I have to tell this to everyone listening, because this is, you were part of the inspiration for me being here. And that's no exaggeration whatsoever. Like many people, I was listening to Coast AM in the 90s. And it was a music career, and I had plenty of time at night to listen, and I used to listen to you and everyone, and I was really inspired to actually get involved. So I packed everything up and I said, right, I'm going to volunteer for the people that I hear on Coast to Coast. You were my first choice. I sent you a fax.
Yep.
And, oh, I don't know if you ever got it, but...
Well, I got it back in the days when faxes were it.
Right.
No Facebook, no YouTube, no nothing. It was a piece of paper.
Right. And you didn't know who I was. I just said, you know, this is what I want. This is what I'm willing to do. But I think that was the time of the Miami Circle. If I'm not mistaken, it was a very chaotic time for you.
It was in that time frame. But the ones I remember were the ones you sent me from, wait for it, Turkey?
Oh, well, no, that's later in the story.
Okay.
Yeah. So I contacted you, and for some reason you didn't respond. So my next choice turned out to be Peter Gersten, the UFO lawyer.
Okay.
Who was on Coast to Coast literally every month back then. And it worked out for me because I'm very into the law and I have a paralegal degree. So I thought, great, I'll call up Peter. And Peter was like, sure, come on out. You know, there was no real pretense with him. So I drove out to Sedona in my little van and all my possessions, and I volunteered for a year for his organization called CAUSE, Citizens Against UFO Secrecy.
Yep.
And we had lawsuits against the government, and we had a lawsuit in federal court in Phoenix. I mean, they were really heady days.
Remember when he filed the lawsuit against NASA on Mars?
Yes. Yeah.
On our behalf?
Right. Absolutely. I do remember that. One of the lawsuits by CAUSE was appealed all the way to the Supreme Court and was still used as a precedent today. So that was an extraordinary time for me because it was my sort of a life-changing time. And then from there, I traveled around the world for 3 years exploring and researching ufology in civilizations like the like Australia and the Middle East.
And that's where I started getting these emails.
Right.
Because we had the technology had now grown from faxes to emails, and I suddenly started getting these emails from a Rob Simone, and each one had a different dateline. It's like it was the who's who of the Middle East. You were in Turkey and in Israel and in Egypt. And the thing I really remember is the visit you had to the Turkish Museum.
Right.
And you were so excited that the director let you in to actually handle and look at that model.
The Sitchin model.
Sitchin.
Yes.
Had talked about and shown in one of his books, which he thought was a model of an ancient spaceship, and you actually were photographed with it. You sent me the actual JPEGs so I could see it in color and 3D and all that. And, you know, so then when we finally met, which was back in L.A. years later, it was like, oh, yeah, this is Rob.
Well, it was amazing because I think Peter said, well, look, why don't you get in touch with Richard? He'll tell you where to go. And you were telling me all these great places to go.
Yep.
And, yes, I did. I went to the Turkey in Istanbul. In fact, I was in Istanbul when they had a UFO sighting with one of their Turkish Air Force pilots. I literally arrived the day before it happened. And it would made all the newspapers. So I started investigating that with Haktan Aktogan. And then I
they're so much more open if you get outside the border of the United States. People are really curious.
You're right. It's absolutely not something that is in the category of disbelief like it is in the Western world.
I just wish you would go back to Turkey so we could get some real insight into Göbekli Tepe.
Right.
Which is this incredible ancient site that was buried like, and this actually is going to connect in with Al Anin. You're going to love this segue. It was buried like 12, 13,000 years ago and only unearthed recently, like in, I think, 1994, and has only been like 5% excavated. And it has apparently an incredibly astronomical time capsule kind of flavor. And that's our model for El Anin.
I see.
It's not a comet.
Right.
Unequivocally, to a probability now, which I showed at the Awake and Aware conference a couple weeks ago in Irvine, to a probability of something like a trillion to one. And I go through in the stream video you can see online if you want me to give a website. You can actually see the numbers that overwhelmingly show anybody who's the slightest bit objective, El Anin is not a comet.
Yeah.
And the mystery starts with Leonid El Anin himself, the guy who ostensibly first found it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Rob, you followed my work kind of closely, right?
Well, now it's been established, Richard. I've been following it since the late 90s, the mid-90s, actually.
So
and just and just to
you,
just to finish, when you would email me, you said to me, you know where you should go? Abydos. And you should go to the Assyrian, which I did. I managed to get in there, bribing the guards and taking pictures of the strange hieroglyphics. And so it was really, you know,
Did you get up on a ladder?
I actually bribed them. They got me a ladder, and it still wasn't high enough. So I took my walking stick, the kind that telescopes, and I strapped my camera to it, set the timer, and held it up. I mean, it was just all in a day's work for a traveling ufologist.
You've never sent me those pictures.
Well, you know what? I've got to dig them out of the archives, but they're there.
I need to see the close-up of the glyphs at Abydos.
But fast forward to me going around the world, ending up in London, getting a radio show, and then just happening all in full circle to the day where I'm actually sitting in this chair having you on the air. It is an homage and a tribute to you in good stead, sir. So I want to say thank you for your inspiration.
Well, gosh, I mean, you know, anytime.
Yeah, and it's just I had to get that story out. Well, yeah, this is what I wanted to ask you about, because when you mentioned the word time capsule, that's something that in people's minds, they think, okay, well, you purposely bury something in the hopes that future generations will pick it up. But how in the world would this comet, as they're calling it, be something that could be purposely put out in space for future generations?
Okay. We have to back up and think of the big picture term time capsule. It doesn't mean bury. That's only on Earth. You bury something to preserve it against erosion, against robbers, against people who would desecrate it, people who would open it too soon and just destroy the contents. You know, wind, weather, erosion, natural forces, weather, vegetation. So you bury stuff on Earth preferably inside rock, to keep it preserved. Well, if you're a interplanetary civilization and you either know or have just gone through a huge planetary catastrophe where all of Earth is devastated and a lot of the rest of your bases in the solar system also have been devastated by some incredibly, almost unimaginable event, the only safe way to preserve information for your dim, distant future ancestors is to place it in some kind of vehicle and send it on a precisely defined trajectory, which will take it out of the inner solar system into almost deep space, well beyond the outer planets, even beyond Pluto and Sedna, et cetera, and will bring it back in a prescribed period of time when, in your model, the physics you have figured out, you've decoded, says that the same things that happened to you way back then might happen to this future generation, your descendants, again.
Well, correct me if I'm wrong, Richard. Correct me if I'm wrong, Richard, but if you wanted to, you could send this asteroid out or this time capsule, and with understanding of the physics and the gravitational forces, you could send this thing on a journey of 1,000 years, 1,000,000 years, and almost be able to predict with extreme accuracy to have it almost boomerang back.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Because celestial orbits, particularly for things that are even still that close to the sun, are incredibly predictable. We have computer models now that can predict the movement of the planets of the solar system millions of years in advance, and you'd be off by maybe 10, 20 miles. I mean, they're that precise. So for an advanced culture, you know, think Atlantean culture,
okay,
circa 13,000 years ago, the time of the last galactic alignment, a la the Mayan calendar, the time of Atlantis, a la a lot of different discussions, Plato, Sitchin, etc. That would be the time frame. And then we have Göbekli Tepe, which is that age and appears to have astronomical information and coded alignment information, according to Robert Bavall, who was there, who I heard one night discussing this with George. And it all fits, because if we're in some kind of danger or under some kind of potential threat, or if there is something we should take advantage of in terms of the physics, in terms of consciousness, we can get into that after the break, then if our ancestors cared enough, as I used to say, to send the very best, they would use, in my model, this idea, this mode, as an absolute way to guarantee that something came back with enough time so we could understand what it meant and maybe act on that information and do something.
Well, what strikes me as interesting is that it's a close call. So could it be that the slingshot near Earth is simply just part of a longer trajectory?
Well, yeah. I mean, when Elenine first found this object in December of last year, December 10th of 2010, he posted, and he's got a website now, Space Obs, and he's also got an Elenine website on Facebook, daily data. You know, it's here, it's there, it's this bright, it's that bright, this is the ideas. He's been totally excluding this artificial model, obviously. But where I went really ding, 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 ding is when I noticed that his first night of observation back on December 10th, when he ostensibly found this thing, it had a magnitude, you're sitting down, right?
I'm leaning, but go ahead.
Plus 19.5.
It's pretty bright. What's that equivalent to in the night sky?
No. Plus magnitudes are incredibly dim.
Oh, okay.
Minus magnitudes are bright. Sirius is like minus 1.46.
Ah.
The sun is minus 27. The full moon is minus 13. So minus magnitudes in the astronomical scale are very bright. Positive plus magnitudes are very dim. The dimmest object you can see with your unaided human eye, even out here in the New Mexico deserts, is like 6th or 7th magnitude. 7th is really pushing it. Elenine was plus 19.5 magnitude. Rob, 19.5? Hint, hint. The number of hyperdimensional physics?
Well, does that figure fluctuate at all?
No.
No, I see.
In other words, when I did the calculation, which I laid out at Awake and Aware, of the brightest comet ever seen and the dimmest comet ever seen. The dimmest comet ever seen is like plus 2830 magnitude seen by Hubble. That was Halley, because we knew exactly where Halley was going out. The brightest comet ever seen was back in 1965, which was a brilliant comet discovered by a Japanese astronomer called Ikea Seki.
Hold it there. We're going to come back and we're going to find out if the inventors of this time capsule figured out a way to make it 19.5 magnitude to fulfill the hyperdimensional model when we come back. My name's Rob Simone. You're listening to Coast AM. Yes, this is Coast to Coast AM, filling in at the last minute. And we're talking about some very interesting things here tonight. Of course, Richard Hoagland's on the line. He's giving us the update on his theory about Comet Elenin, this mysterious object that literally, as we speak, is hurtling through the cosmos, coming very close to our near, dear planet Earth. But is it what it seems to be, or much more? We're going to find out about that. And of course, in the second hour, Rosemary Ellen Guiley is joining us, talking about the new book, Talking to the Dead, by her and George Norrie, which is really about the intersection between technology and communicating with people, entities on the other side. And this is something that, again, I think is extremely fascinating, because it brings the whole subject up to date. In fact, we're going to open up a special line for experiencers on the international line when we start taking phone calls. So if you have a compelling story to tell, we'll take those as well with questions for Rosemary. She is an incredible resource of knowledge when it comes to any aspect of metaphysics. And of course, this book is rising up the charts. You have to take a look at it. It's called Talking to the Dead, and I think you can get it on Amazon. Yes, I'm quite sure of it. I'm looking at it right now. So take a peek on there, and you can get more information. And when we come back, we will continue about the Comet Elenin, what it means, where it's going, and perhaps where it came from. And we're back talking with Richard Hoagland. And Richard, just before the break, you were saying that the magnitude, or how bright the comet is of note because it's so dim. But is that because it's not really intact anymore, as the scientists are saying?
No.
And because it's 22 million miles away, and they say it broke up after a big solar wind knocked it around?
No, this is back when Elenin discovered it.
Ah.
When it was between Jupiter and Mars heading into the inner solar system. It was months and months away. Remember, it passed closest approach to us this afternoon, and it's been en route from the time Elenin discovered it since December of 2010. That's 8 months of falling inward under gravity toward the sun, swinging around the sun, and then coming out across our bow, across Earth's orbit this afternoon at 22 million miles away. There has been extraordinary fear porn all over YouTube, all over Google, all over the internet about this thing for months. And that's what got me intrigued, because, I mean, in and of itself, Elenin was such a nothing object. There have been much brighter, much more interesting objects, like what I was talking about, Ikea Seki. It passed the sun and was minus 17th magnitude. That means it was hundreds of times brighter than the full moon. It was seen in broad daylight by people all over the world back in 1965. Well, that was before you were born. But I actually borrowed an airplane and a friend of mine at WTIC in Hartford, and we chased this comet, Ikea Seki, up to 15,000 feet, and I tried to do a broadcast. Ever tried to do a broadcast from 15,000 feet?
That's a first.
Without oxygen?
Well, if you hold your breath for long enough, you can do it.
We got back to the studio and played the tapes. I sounded absolutely drunk. Of course, I was a bit younger then. I didn't know what I was doing.
Well, you're also oxygen deprived.
Exactly.
Well, okay, so anyway, tell me where it is right now. I mean, in the sense that, has it been partly broken up by the solar winds?
No. This is all fear-mongering and information.
All right.
Elenin, if I can do this linearly, because this is hard to follow on radio without the images, which is why people really need to go and see my Awaken Aware presentation at indigotvplatforms.com.
Okay.
Or go to my Facebook website. It's all over my Facebook website. I have a website with something like 25,000 people
a
now.
A lot of people in there.
Who are fans. And people are talking about this all over there.
So what's the
about it.
What's the timeline here for this?
Well, the timeline is it was discovered last December.
Okay.
Came around the sun in September. In fact, it came around the sun at closest approach to the sun on September 11th. Why is that important? Because you'll see a whole series of 11s in the mathematics of Elenin. When I started looking at its trajectory, its orbit, the thing that was overwhelming, which I lay out in this three-hour presentation, is 19.5 comes up again and again and again. And, Rob, I get the feeling you've forgotten the significance of 19.5.
No, I think it lies at the heart of your hyperdimensional
physics
model.
It's the inscribed tetrahedral angle of a spinning hypersphere. It's where energy comes up. In other words, if you were supposed to communicate to someone in a code one simple phrase that would kind of give them the burst message of what you were trying to say, 19.5 is a code for hyperdimensional physics. Elenin, to the probability now of a trillion to one against this being accidental, is telling us over and over and over again a hyperdimensional message. In when it came by the Earth this afternoon, which was 1950 Greenwich Mean Time, when it, you know, passed the sun, which was on September 11th, which was exactly 111 days from the end of the year, and 111, or any 11111, like 1111, is a mathematical code for 19.5, which I lay out in this presentation. Its angle to the ecliptic, the orbit of the Earth around the sun, 1.84 degrees. You divide the end to 360, you get 195 over and over again. So this thing is an artificial object. It did not break up. It actually was photographed by NASA back on August 19th with the Stereo B mission, which is a solar satellite we've got out in Earth's orbit about 90 degrees behind the Earth, behind the movement of the Earth around the sun. Back in August, Stereo B took some images of Elenin and revealed, which is actually on the COAST website. Let me give you a link so you can actually go, if I can find it here. Here we are. It's in the article section.
Okay.
It's called Enterprise Images of Elenin. The stereo cameras from the NASA spacecraft photograph Elenin, and it turned out to have a tetrahedral energy shield around it, measuring 300,000 miles on each edge. So we have an object on a tetrahedral trajectory, which looks like a tetrahedron when NASA takes pictures of it, and it crosses key moments in that trajectory at times which correspond again and again and again to 19.5, which is the inscribed tetrahedral angle of the hyperdimensional physics model, which, of course, is all about tetrahedrons. There's no doubt in my mind.
Okay, that this is artificial. Well, I have to ask you.
What's its purpose?
Well, I was going to say, you are the only one that seems to be able to figure out the mathematical significance that suggests this might be man-made. My question is,
nobody else is
beyond the fact that you feel as though you've established artificial. That it's artificial in nature. What then beyond that has it told us?
Well, it means you got to next ask the next question, which is, what's it doing here?
Okay.
What's its purpose? What's its mission? Well, Elenin, when he discovered it back in December, remember, announcing he discovered it when it was at plus 19.5 magnitude, he also stated that he had calculated it had a 13,000-year orbit. 13,000 years is exactly half the precessional cycle, think Mayan calendar, and it takes us back to the time of Atlantis, the time of the previous high civilization that may have been destroyed on this planet, that left a whole bunch of clues, including Göbekli Tepe, as time capsules to help us avert the next time the cycle is going to maybe do something bad to us. And this thing comes in from outer space with no warning, except back in 1998, there was a film, remember, called Deep Impact?
Sure.
Starring Morgan Freeman?
Yeah.
Which had a discoverer of a comet that was going to clobber the Earth and destroy civilization. And who? What was the name of the discoverer of that comet? Leo Biderman. Leo Alanin, Leo Biderman. Morgan Freeman was the first black president of the United States. See, Morgan Freeman, Barack Obama. You begin to see a pattern. So one of the models that we've been bringing into the bigger picture here is that there have been a group of people
in Hollywood
who, and other places in government, as we'll see,
who
have known for a long time this thing was coming. And they have tried to obscure its positive hyperdimensional message, which is freeing and liberating, and it really needs to get into the consciousness aspects of this in the next few minutes.
Yeah.
And they instead have used this time, this years from knowing it was coming, to spread a carpet of fear porn, wall-to-wall fear porn all across the web. So if any mainstream folks kind of get wind that something's going to happen, and yesterday Yahoo and space.com posted very fear porn-oriented articles about Alanin finally in the mainstream news, the first thing they would do is run to Google and Google this thing and find all this nonsensical fear porn about Nibiru, and it's a brown dwarf, and it's a black hole, and it's going to come and clobber the Earth and destroy civilization, all of which is, can I say this on national radio, crap.
Yes, you can say that. Well, what do you think should be the collective response to an object that you feel is artificial in nature?
Well, it should be awe and wonder, and one should go and read quickly Arthur C. Clarke's Rendezvous with Rama, which he published back in 1972, which I think is a very positive take on what Alanin was going to be. And by the way, September 11th is mentioned very prominently in Rendezvous with Rama in a very weird way.
Okay.
So I think Arthur was trying to give us a heads up because he also was in on the big picture and knew this was coming, and it's certainly in line with the body of his work, which is all about the evolution of human consciousness back to what we once were, out of where we are now to something we would like to become, where the planet works for everyone.
Mm-hmm. And given the cycle that Alanin is on, when will it come back to Earth? Do you have the date on that?
Well, the orbit has now, according to the calculations, has been shortened to about 11,800 years, but that's irrelevant because if I'm right, if Alanin has technology on board, like a hyperdimensional generator, which was used to create that shield that we actually have photographs posted on the Coast website showing, if that generator is doing what I think it's doing, it also could be raising consciousness on Earth even as it flies by tonight and has been approaching for the last several weeks and will be in interesting geometric configurations with the inner solar system planets at key hyperdimensional angles on November 11th, November 23rd, and October 20th and 21st, just about a week from now.
So you're theorizing that this generator could actually interact with the human physiology in a way in which uplifts us?
Well, consciousness.
Consciousness?
Physiology and consciousness are not the same thing. Remember, we are hyperdimensional beings. Our consciousness is not stuck here in 3D. That's several thousand Coast shows, including the one you're about to have with Rosemary in the next hour.
Well, is the human body itself in the metaphysical form a tetrahedron?
No, but the energy field around it, according to certain people, could be.
Okay.
And the way we resonate with the etheric field, with the torsion field, with this plenum, which actually creates three-dimensional reality, if our advanced ancient ancestors, again, in the model, this thing is a time capsule, knew that we would need some hyperdimensional help right now to kind of get with the program, to use the right physics to avert the problems that are coming and turn them into opportunities. I mean, look at what's going on around the world, the huge, stunning leap forward in consciousness just in the last month. And you know what I'm talking about, right?
Well, first, let me ask you a quick question, because you've laid out a great set of information, but what about the idea that this comet? Hold on. This comet. Let me just finish. This comet that you're saying this comet saying is a generator inside of it. Okay, but what about this? I mean, anything could be on the table, right, Richard?
No.
I mean, you could theorize that this is a generator. Okay, but what about, I mean, aren't there other possibilities? If it is artificial, could it be some sort of intelligence gathering device, maybe?
Why would it have a shield that would be hyperdimensionally consonant to this trajectory? The whole thing, it's like having a Hollywood sign on it saying, I'm an HD mission, you know, carrier. Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Maybe it could be carrying some sort of organic life form or some sort of intelligent life form that we're even not able to quantify
yet? McLuhan, the great Canadian media guy, remember what his famous phrase was? The medium is the message. In our analysis, alanine is the message. The HD physics all over its structure, its orbit, its timing, when it appeared, when it went by, when it's leaving, the alignments, the total message is hyperdimensional physics, which is directly connected to consciousness. Now, the question that I asked that I guess you don't want to answer is Occupy Wall Street, which began on September 17th, on that Sunday 4 weeks ago, when alanine was 19.5 degrees to the Earth-Sun line, exactly in accordance with the model, which is that alanine is here to trigger this great leap forward in consciousness, a la the Mayan calendar, particularly Carl Kalman's interpretation of it, which, as you know, doesn't end in 2012. It ends on October 28th.
Okay, so to the best of your understanding, this shift in consciousness, this lifting, as it were, how will it be appreciable, and when do you think the effect will culminate?
It's already ongoing. Look around the world. Occupy Wall Street has now metastasized into demonstrations all over the planet, 2,000 cities. Just Google on the web. Hundreds of thousands of people turning out, expressing their longing to be free, to be equal, to no longer be oppressed, to no longer be basically in slavery to the 1%. Because we are the 99%, that stunning leap forward.
Well, we've seen some pretty stunning events that I think go beyond that. We've seen the liberation. We've seen Egypt uprising.
Those were precursors.
Right.
And I'm not saying they're not part of the model.
Okay.
I'm saying that alanine, specifically at these angles, could have been a trigger. Now, to forecast what's coming up, look specifically at October 20th and 21st. Why is that important? Because alanine will be crossing Earth's orbit in a week on the 20th.
Okay.
And it will be exactly at 90 degrees to the Earth-Sun line. 90 degrees in the physics is very, very important. It kind of concretizes things that are, to coin a phrase, in the ether and makes them real. That's part of what the hyperdimensional astrological bent of the physics would tell us we should look at. So that's the next data point to follow. The one after that is November 11th, 11, 11, 11, because there are so many 11s. In fact, alanine's name itself, Leonid alanine, is almost a code, if you turn it around, for 9-11, which was 111 days from the end of the year, and 1-1-1-1-1-1s are a mathematical code for 19-5. If you just don't have an open mind and say, oh, this cannot be, you'll never learn anything.
Well, let me ask you this.
So
I find it a little odd to think that this intelligently fashioned vehicle that was flung very carefully toward the planet Earth would be aware of our Gregorian calendar. Tell us about that connection.
How do you know the Gregorian calendar wasn't made up to match its arrival?
Well, I was in the impression that the Roman Catholic Church actually devised a way in which they could make a calendar that their holidays wouldn't move from year to year.
And who is the greatest archive of ancient secrets on the planet?
Well, I think there's a couple of civilizations that have a pretty good hold on that claim.
You wouldn't think the Roman Catholic Church would?
Oh, I think, as I say, the Sumerians, the Egyptians, the Mayans, they're in different fashions.
Who was heir to all that information?
heir to all that information.
Yeah, in the archives, in the catacombs.
Well, right. Rome. Speculation is that they gobbled up quite a bit of it, isn't
There's
there?
No speculation. We know they did.
Well, I'm of the opinion that they did. Richard, we're simply out of time. I want to thank you for coming on and, you know, giving us a tantalizing mystery to ponder. I cannot get to the bottom of these mysteries without the collective audience, family members, the entire gestalt that is Coast to Coast AM. Your website is enterprisemission.com.
Yep, and my Facebook page is clearly marked Richard C. Hoagland, and you'll find the Awaken Aware Conference on Alanine there.
Great. Stay tuned. Coming up with Talking to the Dead, the new book by Rosemary Ellen Guiley and George Norrie.